राजा बिहारी। गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर जारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन, जमुन तीर वन छरी, जमुन तीर वन छरी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी। नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जमुन चिरावन चारी, जामुन तेरा वन छारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Jaya Prabhupada.
Jiva Prabhupada ki Tra Shriman Bhagavatam ki Itai Gaur Premanandi. Greetings from Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 18, Text 24.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
This is translation for text 24. Shukadev Goswami continued. In Ramyaka Varsha, where Vaivashvata Manu rules, the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared as Lord Matsya, the end of the last era, the Chakshusha Manvantar. Vaivashvata Manu now worships Lord Matsya in pure devotional service and chants the following mantra. Text 25. I'll just read the Sanskrit ones.
Om Namo Bhagavate Mukhyatamaya Namasattvaya Pranaya Yujase Sahase Balaya Mahamatsyaya Nama Iti.
Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pure transcendence. He is the origin of all life, bodily strength, mental power, and sensory ability. Known as Matsyavatar, the gigantic fish incarnation, he appears first among all the incarnations. Again, I offer my obeisances unto him. Purport. Srila Jayadev Goswami sings,
Pralayo Payo di jale dritavan ashrivedam, vihita vahitra charitam akedam, keshavadrita nadahari, keshavadrita mina sharira jaya jagadisha hare.
Soon after the cosmic creation, the entire universe was inundated with water. At that time, Lord Krishna, Keshava, incarnated as a gigantic fish to protect the Vedas. Therefore, Manu addresses Lord Matsya as Mukhyatama, the first incarnation to appear. Fish are generally considered a mixture of the modes of ignorance and passion, but we must understand that every incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely transcendental. There is never any deterioration of the Supreme Lord's original transcendental quality. Therefore, the word Sattvaya is used here, meaning pure goodness on the transcendental platform. There are many incarnations of the Supreme Lord, Varaha Murti, the boar form, Kurma Murti, the tortoise form, Hayagriva Murti, the form of a horse, and so on. Yet we should never think any of them material. They are always situated on the platform of Shuddhasattva, pure transcendence. And actually, we'll do one more text. One more translation. My dear Lord, just as a puppeteer controls his dancing dolls and a husband controls his wife, your lordship controls all the living entities in the universe, such as the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. Although you are in everyone's heart as the supreme witness and commander and are outside everyone as well, the so-called leaders of societies, communities, and countries cannot realize you. Only those who hear the vibration of the Vedic mantras can appreciate you. Purport: the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Antarbahi, present within and without everything. One must overcome the delusion caused by the Lord's external energy and realize his presence both externally and internally. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimati Kunti Devi has explained that Krishna appears in this world, nato natyadharo yata, exactly like an actor dressed as a player. Bhagavad Gita, 1861, Krishna says, Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridyeshe arjuna tishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna. The Lord is situated within everyone's heart and outside as well. Within the heart, he is Supersoul, the incarnation who acts as the advisor and witness. Yet although God is residing within the hearts, foolish people say, I cannot see God. Please show him to me. Everyone is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly like dancing dolls controlled by a puppeteer or a woman controlled by her husband. A woman is compared to a doll, Garumai, because she has no independence. She should always be controlled by a man. Still, due to false prestige, a class of women wants to remain independent. What to speak of women, all living entities are Prakriti, female, and therefore dependent on the Supreme Lord, as Krishna himself explains in Bhagavad Gita, Aparayam itastvanam, Prakritim viti me param. The living entity is never independent. Under all circumstances, he is dependent on the mercy of the Lord. The Lord creates the social divisions of human society, brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras, and ordains that they follow rules and regulations suited to their particular position. In this way, all members of society remain always under the Supreme Lord's control. Still, some people foolishly deny the existence of God. Self-realization means to understand one's subordinate position in relation to the Lord. When one is thus enlightened, he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is liberated from the clutches of material energy. In other words, unless one surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord, the material energy in its many varieties will continue to control him. No one in the material world can deny that he is under control. Supreme Lord Narayan, who is beyond this material existence, controls everyone. The following Vedic mantra confirms this point. Eko havai Narayana asit. Foolish persons think Narayan to be on the platform of ordinary existence. Because they do not realize the natural constitutional position of the living entity, they concoct names like Daridra Narayan, Swami Narayan, or Mithya Narayan. However, Narayan is actually the supreme controller of everyone. This understanding is self-realization. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dati Swam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Evacha Patitanan Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Good morning. So this section is a new set of prayers being offered by Vaivashvata Manu, who is actually offering prayers to Lord Matsya, Matsyadev, the fish incarnation. We were reading this recently. And he's described as the first incarnation to appear. So I think it's helpful just to refresh our memory of this, that pastime of why the Lord appeared and the nature of that incarnation in order to better understand the prayers and the devotion of Vaivasvata Manu. So it's explained that before he was Vaivasvata Manu, he was known as King Satyavrata in the previous millennium. That was the Swayambhuva Manu period. And as a great king, it says that Lord Matsya appeared to show favor to him. There was actually two appearances of Lord Matsya. The first one was to save the Vedic knowledge, because Lord Brahma was emanating the Vedic knowledge. At the end of his day, he was getting tired, and the demon Hayagriva stole the Vedic knowledge. So the first Matsyadeva incarnation actually was to kill the demon Hayagriva and to rescue the Vedic knowledge. But the second incarnation during the next millennium was to show favor to King Satyavrata. So he was a very pious king, a very devoted king. And the pastime is that it was getting towards the end of Brahma's day. And so Brahma was getting tired. The waters of inundation were soon to come at the end of Lord Brahma's day. There's a devastation. So King Satyavrata went to the water, and I believe he was doing some sort of duties in the river or the sea, and a small fish appeared in his hands and was swimming there. And he saw the fish and he threw it back into the water. But as a great king, the fish then replied, "My dear king, please protect me. There are many great living entities here in this sea that can easily devour me. Please give me protection." So very happily, as a king, as his duty to give protection, he very happily took the fish and placed him in a small pot. And so he was satisfied to do his service. The fish was content. But the next day he came and the fish had grown so much that he was too big for the small pot. So the king, and he requested, he said, "My dear king, please offer me a suitable place. This is not sufficient for me." So the king took the small fish and threw him in a well. Immediately the fish expanded to the size of the well, 3 cubits, and he was unable to fit in the well. And he requested again, "My dear king, please provide me a suitable place. I've taken shelter of you. Please provide me somewhere." So the king took him and he threw him actually in a lake, a small lake. And again, immediately the fish assumed the form, the size of a lake, and requested the king, "My dear king, please protect me. I've taken shelter of you. Provide me a suitable living space. This is too small." So he found another lake. He put him in another, the largest reservoir of water. He put him in. Immediately he expanded that size. So finally he took him, he threw him in the sea. When he expanded to a size beyond capable of being held in the sea, immediately he had the revelation. The light bulb went on. The aha moment. He realized, "This is the Supreme Personality of God. This is my worshipable Lord, who's appeared in the size of this gigantic fish." So he asked of Lord Matsya, "What is the reason for your incarnation? Why have you appeared this way? And please explain about yourself to me." So then Matsyadev explained that, "I've appeared to show favor to you, and actually the devastation is about to occur. Very soon the waters, the rains will start coming, and the whole world will be inundated. So what you need to do actually, at that time, I will send a great ship, a great boat to you. And you board that boat with great sages and rishis and all the herbs and plants, and board that ship to protect you from the water of inundation, and I will protect you. Actually, what you should do is take the serpent Vasuki, serpent and tie him to my horn. And then when the water of inundation comes for a very long time, for the night of Brahma, you'll be protected. You will be safe. Many of you have probably seen the illustration. And this is in some temples also. We have a small picture up there. So then that's what happened, actually. The waters of devastation came, and he boarded the ship with all the rishis, and the rishis were saying, we just have faith in the Lord. If we just pray to the Lord, surely he will protect us from this calamity. So they boarded the ship, and Lord Matsya, he manifests a form 8 million miles long. I don't know how long, what the diameter of this planet is. Does anyone know, Siddharth? Yes. How many miles? It's 10,000 miles, this planet. So he assumed the form of 8 million miles. So even greater than this planet. Of course, because the inundation was for all three worlds. So he assumed this magnanimous form, this huge, gigantic form. And he protected Satyavrata. And at that time, actually, he began to instruct Satyavrata about the Vedic knowledge. And he taught him the system of Sankhya Yoga. And in the Bhagavatam, the king offers very beautiful prayers also to Matsyadeva at that time. So this was a pastime that the Lord enacted. And here in the next Manvantara, actually, that king appeared as the son of Vivasvan, as Vaivasvata Manu. And also we know that he continued the disciplic succession of spiritual knowledge, that Krishna says he originally spoke this knowledge. So he's continuing the parampara, the Vedic knowledge continues now. And here in this particular region of Jambudvip in Ramyaka Varsha, he's offering prayers in pure devotional service, chanting these mantras. So that's just a little explanation of the pastime, and we'll just take a look at some of the prayers here and see what we can get out of, actually, by hearing the great prayers of the pure devotees. So the end of this first purport, I'll just repeat this again. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is pure transcendence. He is the origin of all life, bodily strength, mental power, and sensory ability. Known as Matsyavatar, the gigantic fish incarnation, he appears first among all the incarnations. Again, I offer my obeisances unto him. Now, generally, fish are not considered a very glorious creature. Prabhupada explains they're generally in a mixture of modes of ignorance and passion. So the question, why would Krishna take this form? But it's explained that actually whatever form the Supreme Lord takes is purely transcendental. There's never any deterioration of the Supreme Lord's original transcendental quality. So we should understand in the conclusion here, we should never think of any of them as material. They are always situated on the platform of Shuddha Sattva, pure transcendence. So just as Lord Matsya is on this platform, we can understand that all of Krishna's activities are enacted on that platform. And so this is sometimes the difficulty we have in appreciating Krishna's pastimes, or the activities of the spiritual world. Because we don't have an experience of this nature of Shuddha Sattva, therefore things... It doesn't appear so amazing. We hear of Krishna's interaction with devotees. Perhaps we've heard Krishna book many times, and we're thinking, yeah, that's nice. You know, he has some friends, kills some demons. But actually, all these activities, they're completely non-material. They're not at all similar to the activities of this material world. They're really inconceivable. And all the Lord's pastimes being based in this level of Shuddha Sattva, every moment, there's never a dull moment in Vaikuntha or Goloka Vrindavan. Every moment, the devotees are feeling such ecstasy in their loving relationship with Krishna. Krishna is actually feeling so much ecstasy relating with his devotees also. This continuous, ever-expanding dynamic of pure love in the Shuddha platform. So therefore, we sometimes hear these things and we're not so impressed. We're thinking, okay, the coward boys had lunch. What's the big deal? I also had lunch when I was in elementary school. No, but this is a problem that we don't understand. The Lord's activities are always on this pure transcendental platform. So sometimes also hearing about the Lord's incarnations, we may not understand. So this is just indicating our incapability actually to understand the realm of the spiritual world of transcendence. So then the question might arise, well, then how does one approach that realm? How can we get insight into that higher nature? So that's actually explained then in the next text. He prays, my dear Lord, just as a puppeteer controls his dancing dolls and the husband controls his wife, your lordship controls all the living entities in the universe, such as the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and shudras. Although you are in everyone's heart as the supreme witness and commander and are outside everyone as well, the so-called leaders of societies, communities, and countries cannot realize you. Only those who hear the vibration of the Vedic mantras can appreciate you. So then this is the key, that only those who hear the vibration of the Vedic mantras can appreciate you. By just giving submissive oral reception to the messages, actually it awakens our appreciation and our understanding of Krishna's nature. This process is described actually as very simple, submissive oral reception. Because what that does is it allows us to receive something from beyond our capacity. With the material mind senses, it's using a very limited machine to try to receive something of a much greater quality. You can come up with an example, perhaps on your own, but you can see it's an incompatible situation. Therefore, the only means of approaching that realm, we know this from Ishapanishad, from the introduction, that simply by hearing, actually, this is the process of the beginning process to actually understand Krishna. Here, specifically, hearing the mantras of the Vedic scriptures is the means by which to awaken and to appreciate, actually, to come to knowledge of the Lord's transcendental position. Otherwise, it's completely beyond the realm of our experience, said the Lord's aparusheya. He's transcendental to any material touch. So this is the means, actually, and we see that we could never conceive of any of the pastimes of Krishna or his incarnation. Who could ever come up with these pastimes? Sometimes this is a point for that we use for convincing people that no one could just invent these type of activities. They're so amazing and so it's so bizarre that you could never just imagine something like this. The Lord's activities are so much beyond the realm of what we could even imagine. So therefore you should accept because we can't conceive of these activities simply by submissively hearing the messages actually. It allows us the access by which we can appreciate Krishna, and also Krishna manifests in the heart by that process, because he's not different from that message. Just by hearing about Krishna, that is Krishna present. So the more that we hear, the more that we give our attention in the proper consciousness, the proper submissive mood, actually. Submissive and eager mood, these are two points that are given. I was just hearing a class. And it was in regards actually to Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit. Why Maharaj Pariksit was such a qualified student? It's because of these two things actually. Because he was very submissive to his Siksha Guru in that sense, and to Shukadeva Goswami. And also he's very eager to hear the pastimes. There's so much, it's explained, there's so much nectar in Krishna's activities, in the activities of all of the incarnations of the Lord. It's just complete. If we could actually perceive the reality of that subject matter, our heart would be immediately stolen. But we're not at that position. It takes us a very long time, and we may not be getting so much taste. But the idea is actually if we can develop eagerness, that is a qualification actually that will increase our appreciation and increase the quality of rasa to be experienced by us. If we develop this great eagerness like Maharaj Pariksit, then because Krishna is in the heart, he sees that someone is very eager to hear about me, then he reveals himself more and more. But if we don't have the eagerness, we can go on hearing and hearing, then Krishna won't manifest. Because we're not showing to Krishna, we don't have the indication that we are actually eager for that type of experience. And also that the submissive point is very important, that the disciple must be very submissive to the spiritual master in order to receive. The spiritual master sees the disciple very submissive and very eager. Then, with great pleasure, actually, he can impart very confidential aspects of spiritual life. So, the purport also, there's a number of points being mentioned. that even though Krishna is within and without everything, still foolish people say, I cannot see God, please show him to me. And what is the reason for that? Why is that that, maybe I'll just ask a question. Why is it that even though Krishna is within and without, foolish people say, I cannot see God, please show him to me. What's the reason for, how is that possible? They don't have love. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So maybe they're not submissive to transcendental knowledge. They don't have faith. Anyone else? Yeah, there's a lot of different reasons. Actually, I think ultimately illusion or ignorance, they're just ignorant, actually, of Krishna's reality. So then one might ask the question, why are they ignorant? Why don't they know about Krishna? And that's, of course, because they've turned away, and by nature they've received the false ego. They've received, and by dint of false ego, they have. I was reading in one of the purports in these prayers, Prabhupada says, it's simply because of lusty desire. Simply because of lusty desire, rather than seeing everything as the energy of Krishna, they're seeing actually everything as the energy for my enjoyment. So this kind of contradiction actually prevents them from being able to perceive the spiritual energy. And so this is the root, or this is the main dimension of our bondage, is the false ego is telling us, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the controller, and I'm the master. But we know that Krishna says, actually, that the real peace formula is that Krishna is all of those things. Bhoktaram yogya tapasam, sarvaloka maheshwaram, suhridam sarvutanam, gitvamam shantamrishti. The one who knows me, supreme beneficiary, of all sacrifice, the supreme controller of everything, and the best friend, he obtains peace, actually, from the pangs of material existence. So this is actually a formula of self-realization. That's what's being mentioned in the purport, that until one understands that they're completely controlled by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they'll always remain under the grip of material energy in its different varieties. So specifically here, Prabhupada's mentioning everyone's under the control, just like dancing dolls are controlled by a puppeteer, or a woman is controlled by her husband. So Prabhupada does make this point that the women should not remain independent, but be under control of their husband. And in modern context, this may seem strange, but actually, if we look at the lives of the great histories, for example, the Mahabharata, we see the lives of such amazing chastity and all the qualities, the divine qualities become apparent by chastity for a woman, to her husband. I was thinking specifically in the case of, I believe it was Kandharvi, Duryodhana's wife. Does anyone recall that? Duryodhana was, of course, born blind. And so Kandharvi is considered one of the most chaste women for all time, because upon hearing that and knowing that that was her husband, she immediately blindfolded herself for the rest of her life, never wanting to ever feel superior to her husband in any way. So, of course, such things seem strange in the modern context, but when we hear about the purity of women and their relationships with their husband, actually, it's very inspiring that following that particular dharma, how they become enriched with all the divine qualities simply by that one principle of being very submissive, obedient to the husband. So similarly, actually, the jiva, Prabhupada says, all living entities are prakriti female. So actually it's purifying for us to hear these things, because it indicates what the proper mentality should be. The jiva should be like that to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, actually. Always submissive and subservient. And also the male has to be qualified, of course. The husband... the teaching of how this social system works. The husband can't just be some nonsense, because if you're submissive to some nonsense, then what good is that? But no, they would be very submissive because the husband would be so qualified. He would be Vaishnava, a great soul, either Rishi or king or in any position, whatever, a devotee, actually. Therefore, the system progresses nicely. But here, actually, all living entities are prakriti and dependent on the Supreme Lord, as Krishna himself explains. The living entity is never dependent. Under all circumstances, he is dependent on the mercy of the Lord. So we see that this is, of course, our greatest problem, and how beneficial it is to understand modern society in light of this understanding. That Isha Upanishad says one should pursue the path of nescience as well as the path of knowledge, side by side. So we have to understand actually the result of not having proper knowledge in modern society, seeing how without understanding this principle that one is actually subservient and dependent on the Lord, how the egoistic principle is being enacted out in such a rebellious, whole-scale manner, and the result of our modern society. That in all different stages of life, as soon as a small child is born, we see this atheistic principle being manifest, that actually I'm the controller. As soon as a small child, Jaya gives example of some his cousin or something who immediately, very young, can hardly walk, but he's taking things saying, mine. This is mine. He's a small child. So from the very moment actually of our appearance in this world, we're trying to lord it over. We're trying to enjoy, get the most toys, just scream and wail if we don't get what we want. It's a very miserable situation from the moment of our appearance here. And as we progress through, as we go through school also, we can see the propensities. I want to have all the best friends, you know. Maybe as on the onset of youthhood, the attractor, I want to have a relationship with this male or this female, even from very early on, trying to enjoy, not understanding actually in complete illusion that actually Krishna is the supreme controller, we're all servants. So then in school, trying to be the best at everything, trying to excel all others, sports, academics, so many different ways. Then graduating, now you have to enter, they say, the real world. What is there? The illusion world. The real world of illusion, of trying to be a master of matter. Going around, okay, I have to get the best job now, and now I have to take care of I and mine. The family structure must be very nice, with the house. All the way till the age of old age and disease and death, still trying to lord it over that now we can retire, honey. We can go on the cruise and enjoy this. So, no, but then the body, you know, now the time is up, the body's not functioning so well, so the extreme frustration and misery that comes at that point, that there's very high suicide rates. People, they can't take it, they can't enjoy it, they leave their body willingly. Can't take this anymore. I'm not the controller, the master. So this is all, of course, the root of our material situation and the exact opposite of our eternal constitutional position. Self-realization means to understand one's subordinate position in relation to the Lord. When one is thus enlightened, he surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and is liberated from the clutches of material energy. In other words, unless one surrenders to the lotus feet of the Lord, the material energy in its many varieties will continue to control him. So then this is the next step, actually. If we're following the sequence properly, then what we have to do is realize our subordinate nature and actually surrender. Until actually one surrenders, material energy in its many varieties will continue to control him. And surrender is a particular word, of course, but it has a very deep meaning, and we know that it's explained in six different ways. But the problem that with such a deep-rooted egoistic conception, our conception of surrender can even be materialistic. We're thinking, okay, I'll surrender, you know, things that are in regard to I and mine without actually understanding that everything belongs to Krishna. So we have to have a proper spiritual conception of life in order to properly surrender. And then we understand, we can appreciate that this is the highest spiritual principle, to surrender to the will of God. The perfection of the living entity lies in one simple thing, surrender to the will of God. It's not that we have to do anything very big. We were thinking I had to do something huge, that I have to, be the next Prabhupada, spread Krishna consciousness all over the universe. I have to, have so many disciples. I have to be the foremost scholar in ISKCON, and I have to be the greatest. So many different things. The mind is doing this. It's telling us this is how you'll be successful. But the principle of success actually is just to become surrendered to the will of God. Just like we know Lord Chaitanya's instructed, Trinadapi Sunichena. So just like a small stick or a piece of grass, if the wind comes, it just blows wherever the wind takes it. It's not gonna argue with that or try to do something different. So similarly, the jiva has to be this in this position of complete full surrender that whatever Krishna wants me in any situation, that's my success. That's the perfection. Not that I have to do this or do that, but I have to just subjugate my will to the will of God. If he wants me to do some big service, then that's fine. But the operative principle is that I'm surrendered to his desire. Or if he wants to keep me in a very lowly, menial position, no one even hears about me, no one even knows about me, I'm just doing my service, then that is the perfection. So sometimes I hear many people actually say that the word surrender has a unique connotation. That we hear surrender and we think, okay, hands up, bring out the white flag. And people, they say, but I never really understood that emphasis or that doesn't make sense to me. But on a personal note, for me, that makes perfect. That's when I think of surrender, that's how I think and that's how I feel. And in regards to Krishna, it seems appropriate. When I hear about surrender, that's what comes to my mind. And it's pacifying, thinking that, okay, I Krishna, we come before the deity usually like this, but Krishna says surrender, so we should just come like okay, bring out the white flag. I've been trying to lord it over since, as we said, the moment of my birth, which to speak of many other lifetimes, and now I'm just surrendering. You're the supreme control, you're the master, and my perfection lies in just being surrendered to you. So I always actually appreciated that kind of warlike description of surrender. It seems quite logical in our situation because our false ego is so much really at odds with Krishna. It's like a battle in some sense. Yes, the material energy in its many varieties will continue to control him unless one takes up the principle of surrender. And we know there's these different limbs of surrender also that are just helpful to review because this is one of the most important principles of spiritual life. And even though we may have a general sense of what it means, I surrender, but then how do we actually act that out in our day-to-day life or in our services? We want to go very deep into that mood of surrender. So maybe we can just review what those aspects of surrender are. There's considered six limbs of surrender. Does anyone recall those? Yes. Okay, just give one. Accepting that which is favorable for one's devotional service. Yeah, this is very important, actually. Thank you. Anyone else? Six limbs. Now there's five left. Rock talk. Yes. So consequently, then rejecting that which is unfavorable. Okay. Anyone else? Six limbs of surrender, very important. Everyone should know this. Accepting the Lord as one's only protector. If you want to actually surrender, like in a battle, if you surrender to someone, then you're dependent on them. Not that you surrender and then you still have your own program. But if you surrender, then that person is a protector, just like taking shelter of someone. Like this small fish, it took shelter of the king. Of course, this is the Lord's pastime, because it's unique, because here the Lord is taking shelter, seeming to take shelter of the king. Of course, all living entities are always taking shelter of Krishna. But so he's taking shelter, he's accepting the king as his protector. That in all circumstances, I don't have to protect myself, I've taken shelter of you. We can see in the pastimes, the activities of Krishna, how much he's taking care of his devotees and protecting them in all circumstances. the cowherd boys, they're just marching into Ghasura, the mouth of Ghasura. They know Krishna will protect us in any situation. So this is very nice. Accepting the Lord, only Krishna as one's protector. Actually, no one else can protect me. And thinking that anyone else can protect me is an illusion, as Prahlad Maharaj explains. Father or the guardian, they can't actually give protection. Actually, only Krishna can protect us in all circumstances. Okay. What else? Anyone else know? As the only master, the maintainer. Yes. And then, similarly, a surrendered person, maybe in the battle, you lost the battle, so now you're under complete control of the opposing party. Whatever they do with you, you're at their mercy. So similarly, when we surrender, we're dependent on the Lord to maintain us. This is very important, that we don't think I'm maintaining myself for working, or even in the temple that, you know, I have to take care of myself. I have to carefully ration out the prasadam, otherwise I'm not going to get... No, the proper mood is that Krishna will always provide what I need, actually. That he's going to protect me, and only Krishna is maintaining me. Even if I get to the prasadam line 2 hours early, if Krishna is not protecting, if he's not maintaining me, then there'll be no prasadam. They'll bring out empty trays. But if I know Krishna is always maintaining me, then I get there... at 11 p.m. and there's one portion left. Because Krishna is our only maintainer. So these are actually principles that are operating the lives of pure devotees. And at every moment they're, because of this surrender, then Krishna is very, he can reveal himself more and more. Krishna does take that very personal role in their lives. Yes, thank you. Okay, there's two more. We've gotten 4 out of 6. Anyone remember 2 more? Atmanivedanam. Thank you. Yes. Atmanivedanam is described as full surrender. And the other one being to remain humble, always meek and humble. So they all go very well together. You can't surrender unless you're humble, unless you're meek, actually. The false ego doesn't allow us to surrender. The whole nature of false ego is that I'm the master. So one must always remain meek and humble. And also full surrender. That means just assimilating all the points and actually living with that mentality. That whatever seems to be in mine or my position actually belongs to you. And I'm fully surrendered to you. My body, mind, soul, words, all of these things. So these are just understanding these points will really help fix us in this instruction that Krishna has given to surrender. And without surrendering, of course, on the negative side, we see that one will always remain in the material existence, in the field of material existence, identifying with the body, mind, false ego for eternity, actually. One will just stay in the material world until we implement these things. Now, I think before we close, there's just because Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, in his Sharanagati prayers, has written songs on each of these limbs of surrender. So maybe a few that I just wanted to focus are actually the principles that were first mentioned, to accept that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. That these are very critical points, because oftentimes we know what we should do or what Krishna wants to do, but we don't do it. We know what we shouldn't do, but we do. So this weakness of heart, this is preventing us to get to the higher realms of surrender. So these are very concrete principles that have to be there. That accepting only that which is favorable. Just imagine how nice our progression in devotional life would be if we just accepted only that which is favorable. And we reject that which is unfavorable. This keeps us on track. So we'll just go through one or two of these prayers by Bhaktivinoda Thakur to help us try to get to that mood of only accepting that which is favorable. This is what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur prays. I will carefully engage in all those activities that are favorable for your devotional service. I will execute all of those activities that are favorable for devotional service with the help of my senses. I will faithfully hear the discussions of your glories. I will see your abode to my eyes' full satisfaction. I will maintain my body by respectfully honoring your remnants of food. I will smell the sweet aroma of that prasad and tulasi leaves. I will always engage my hands in your service, and I will continuously reside in your abode. I will dovetail my desires in your service, and I will display my anger towards those who are envious of you. In this way, all my propensities and dealings will become favorably engaged in your devotional service. Whatever is favorable for your devotees, I will accept that as favorable for your devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur does not know what is religiosity and what is irreligiosity. He simply desires that all his activities become favorable for the execution of devotional service to the Lord. And on the converse, in order to do that properly, then that entails giving up that which is unfavorable. So I'll just share the converse. With great care and attention, I will give up all those activities that are unfavorable for rendering devotional service unto you. I will not associate with people who are averse to your devotional service. I will never see the faces of those who are envious of Lord Gauranga. I will not reside in a place that is unfavorable for cultivating devotional service to you, and I will not become attached to any activities that are detrimental to devotional service. I will never study any literature that contradicts conclusions of devotional service, and I will never hear a scriptural commentary that does not advocate your devotional service. I do not accept as holy places any place that Lord Gauranga has not visited. I consider that knowledge is to be most insignificant, which does not encourage my performance of devotional service. I do not respect that time which I am unable to use for your devotional service. If my relatives are averse to you, I consider them to be strangers. I will carefully give up all desires that are unfavorable for your devotional service. I will not accept any foodstuff offered by non-devotees. I will carefully give up everything that is unfavorable for devotional service. This is my promise to you. Falling at the lotus feet of the Lord, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur begs for his mercy, so that he will have enough strength to give up activities that are unfavorable to devotional service. Very beautiful prayers, and I think we've said enough about that, but we can just appreciate the more by entering into this mood, Krishna reciprocate, he's more inclined to reciprocate with us in our devotion by adopting these limbs of surrender. And this is the only means of actually getting ourselves out of material entanglement, that without this we'll remain trapped in material existence. So, thank you all very much. Are there any questions or comments? Yes.
Hi, Krishna. You think as a devotee develops more faith and sincere love in just his services, that Krishna reciprocates by wiping away those things that sometimes become a hindrance in us, in our relationship?
He gives us the opportunity to do that. Generally, yeah, he'll give us a taste and attraction. Attraction for devotional activities. So when there's attraction for the spiritual activities, automatically the material activities will diminish. So in one sense, you could consider it as an automatic thing, that if Krishna is pleased with my service, automatically I'm losing attraction for those activities. But as we get more refined, we want to really refine and fine-tune our service and our consciousness, then Krishna is giving us that opportunity, but we have to take that step and prove to Krishna that that's what we really want to do. The opportunity is always there. There's always these different options. You can t-
do this, favorable to me, or you can also do this. It may be a devotional activity, but it may not be the right time, may not be the right place, may not be the right atmosphere, things like that. So always choosing the best engagement for our devotional service. That's also up to us with our free will. Yes.
Or always, that Krishna is my protector, Krishna is my maintainer.
Well, if you want to do something always, you have to start doing it sometime. So if we start thinking about this periodically, if it becomes a meditation for us, that each time maybe we take prasad, we just reflect, actually Krishna has provided this for me. Nothing, no one else, actually, just Krishna. So little by little, actually, we can get fixed in a stage of continuous remembrance like that. So I would say that by small steps and making it a regular meditation, actually, we should really contemplate these points. See, sometimes the problem is we're hearing so many nice points, but we don't have sufficient time or ability to actually meditate or contemplate on them. So then they get put aside, like on the computer, you just minimize it or put it aside, and then we don't get to really get into it because something else, the new program comes. So really reflecting on that over time, and gradually it can become fixed. Anything else? Yeah, okay, one more. Yes, fine.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the differences between the qualities of subordinates and blind following, the difference between the two.
Yeah, Prabhupada always discouraged blind following. Krishna consciousness is a science. That means there's a process, and it's up to us actually to properly educate ourselves in the nature of that science. Just like generally before taking initiation from a spiritual master, one has to be tested, or they have to understand what the qualifications of the spiritual master are, what the qualifications of the disciple is, many different principles that we have to ourselves become familiar with in order to make sure that we're not just doing something blindly, that the spiritual master doesn't actually appreciate if we're simply on the level of not intelligently following. Now, in a certain context, Prabhupada does use the word, I blindly follow my Guru Maharaj. But that's because the implicit faith has been developed using one's intelligence. And he's at the point where that stage of submission is there. We should also try to develop that. But in the beginning, we have to cultivate our own understanding of devotional aspects, so that we're aware actually of the principles of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and that we can see how these principles are always in harmony. That actually prevents us from blind following. And there's a pastime actually of Lord Balaram, I forget which demon, but one of the demons he's killing is indicating ignorance of one's spiritual identity, or one's spiritual position. And that's one of the anartas that we ourselves have to endeavor to remove by assiduously familiarizing ourselves with the spiritual science. So just progressing in our understanding of the science of Krishna consciousness prevents us from blind following. Now, on the other hand, to achieve the position of submission of a subordinate. So the subordinate, he has an understanding of the principles of bhakti, but understanding the root of our cause of suffering is false ego. He also recognizes that I have a great enemy within my heart of that, to reject authority, to reject superiors. So very carefully also developing a humble mood of service to all the Vaishnavas. Actually, this will very much help us. In the beginning, generally, this mood can be there because we're very ignorant. In the beginning, we come to devotees, they're dressed like this, they have all this knowledge, they're very pukka in everything they do. So we're very submissive. Okay, you just tell me what to do. You know, you guys are experts. I don't know anything. But then sometimes we get a little knowledge. After a few years, then we're thinking, oh, why are you telling me to do like this? I've been reading. I know what this is supposed to, I know how things are supposed to work. So we should always be on guard that our acquirement of knowledge does not hinder the mood of submission or subordination to our superiors, but rather it's supposed to enhance it. It's supposed to put us in a position where we very dutifully carry out the instructions of our superiors. And this is, especially for brahmacharis, one of the operating principles. Brahmachari means the menial servant of the spiritual master and therefore those who represent the spiritual master, the authorities. This is like the main principle of brahmachari. So the more that we can take that up, then we'll be benefited not only by in our association with our immediate dealings, but also actually with Krishna. The Vedic culture is a means by which we can establish our relationship with Krishna. So it's a practice. By being subordinate to our authorities, we're practicing being subordinate to Krishna. Like that. So specifically the question was, how do we be subordinate without having blind faith? And I think address that we should understand the science and scientifically try to develop a humble mood of service. Is that okay? It's a nice question. It'd be nice to go more into that. Okay, I think we'll stop here. Thank you all very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki.